This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Democracy, an aspiration for much of the world. President Joe Biden, when he was a candidate for the presidency, and immediately upon his taking the field in the primaries of 2020, published an essay in the very distinguished Foreign Affairs. I learned from my colleague and guest, Sadanan Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, and writing his column for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Then Vice President Joe Biden, former Vice President, candidate for the Democratic nomination, wrote, "Why America Must Lead Again, Rescuing U.S. Foreign Policy After Trump. It begins by nearly every measure, the credibility and influence of the United States in the world have diminished since President Barack Obama and I left office on January 20th, 2017. A startling beginning, and in this course of this essay, which I recommend, the then-candidate, now President Joe Biden, recommended that democracies come together and talk about their problems and their strengths. That has led to not one, but now two democracy summits in Washington, virtual because of the pandemic and because of the burden on people to travel. However, Sadanan Dume reports the strange collection of democracies and non-democracies, those who were invited and those who weren't. And that has led to puzzlement about what the administration hopes to achieve from these summits. Sadanan, a very good evening to you. The original idea is a good one, but then we get to the guest list. And the guest list is a puzzle. What was your first impression of the first summit, which we're not talking about now? And did the second summit improve this guest list? Good evening to you.
Very good evening, John. Well, you know, I see it slightly differently. I think the idea of standing up for democracy is a very good one. I think doing it via summit is not a good idea. And I think the way that the Biden administration has executed it was truly terrible. So it's the underlying goal is a good idea. The idea of a summit is bad. The execution was really awful. And, you know, you could see it sort of, you know, obviously in the guest list, like who was in, who was out. There were countries that are in who are friends of the U.S. and the U.S. needs, particularly in Asia, places like Singapore. There were countries that are kind of controversial in U.S. politics, like Hungary, that were left out because it may be popular in certain Republican circles. And then there were some absurd countries that were included, including Iraq, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Angola, which are not democracies by any stretch of the imagination. So the whole thing was a bit of a mess.
Because they came together to talk about democracy, it's a puzzle now that after all these years, we don't have a very clear definition of what it means, a participation by the people. But we know Vladimir Putin was elected by popular vote, we're told. There's an election upcoming in Turkey that is in grave doubt by the opposition. Was that addressed in the Democracy Summit 1 or Democracy Summit 2, that voting isn't necessarily and isn't often a strong indicator of democracy being practiced?
Well, they seem to do that selectively, right? So if there are, I couldn't really detect the pattern that they used. So in the case of some countries, they seem to define democracy as a liberal democracy. A democracy which has not just elections, but also checks on power, like we have. They have a free media, they have an independent judiciary, and so the person who is elected can't just do whatever he pleases. That's the kind of definition that seems to be applied in order to keep some countries out. But in other cases, it seemed like just any old kind of election is enough to let you into the democracy summit. And so there's a kind of their definition was not consistent. Because if the definition was consistent, then you would have many countries that were excluded in places like Hungary and Turkey, maybe even Russia. But if you were being stickler about your norms, then there would be many countries that were included that would not have been allowed, including places like Serbia.
Let's go to the list that you identify as most puzzling. Those who were not invited, Hungary, you've mentioned already, Thailand, Tunisia, and Turkey. Turkey's conducting a presidential election right now, within weeks. As far as I understand it, the opposition has a very strong candidate and is leading in the polls. Mr. Erdogan has been in power for 23 years, and he's overwhelmed by economic distress, by the earthquake, certainly by the war in the Black Sea Basin. Inviting Turkey, it occurs to me, would have been a strong idea. Can we sense why it was excluded?
It was excluded. Yeah. I think the reason is pretty obvious, that on Erdogan's watch, Turkish democracy or liberal democracy in Turkey has pretty much fallen to pieces. He has taken on great powers. He has eviscerated the media. There are literally hundreds of journalists rotting in jail. He has hobbled the power of the military, which was a sort of, upholding Kemalist secularism. And he has defenestrated the courts. So he's kind of been the test case, I would say, Erdogan, of all of those people who argued that Islamism is incompatible with liberal democracy, have been proved right by Erdogan. Of course, he's popular, and of course, he's won elections, but he has done that by really dismantling anything that we would recognize as democracy.
So popularity is not the criteria that was followed, because Mr. Erdogan has popularity. I don't know if popularity is a good measure of anybody's success as a Democrat, but once you're in power, for example, Lula da Silva, recently re-elected again for the third time in Brazil, is popular. And that suggests that democracy is working in Brazil. But as you say, Erdogan is popular in Turkey and democracy is not working. So now let's move to the two big challenges for the subcontinent. Pakistan first. The government, the Sharif government now in place, is overwhelmed by difficulties. Pakistan was invited. It chose not to attend. It's overwhelmed by difficulties, the flooding, the famine, and then also challenged by Imran Khan, the previous prime minister. The overwhelming aspect of this is that Khan is using, to my reading, the mechanisms of parliamentary democracy in order to undermine the Sharif government. Is that a successful example of democracy?
Well, Pakistan, I mean, it's hard to call it a successful example of democracy. It's been ruled by the military for almost half its existence. But the situation they face right now, you're absolutely right, it's a real crisis, because Imran Khan was eased out of power last year in a vote of no confidence in parliament. He's on the return. He's on the warpath. And he's drawing massive crowds wherever he goes. And he wants elections to be held. He thinks he's going to come back. But because he did such a not a good job the last time around, there are powerful elements in the country's army that want to keep him out. So Pakistan is really sort of facing this. It's facing this a debt crisis. It needs a bailout from the IMF. It's facing a food crisis. It's facing terrorism. So it's kind of in the middle of this perfect storm. And in the middle of all this is Imran Khan, who is this charismatic populist leader, very much in the mold of someone like Erdogan, who is trying to kind of overturn the existing structures and grab power.
India was invited. India is a democracy, and it's a democracy that likes to argue. Right now, Narendra Modi is extremely popular, and yet, what is the hesitation about India as a democracy?
I mean, India is clearly a democracy, I would agree with you. I think the hesitation in this case is that there has been a certain amount of democratic backsliding. And by that, I mean that the government, it's not the first government that's done this, but the government has put pressure on journalists. It has put pressure on the judiciary. So the checks and balances in a well-functioning democracy that stop the elected government from having absolute power over people, that safeguard individual rights, that safeguard minority rights, that safeguard freedom of speech, those are really coming under pressure in India. And that's why sort of many people have concerns that by inviting Modi to speak to this audience, it was as though the U.S. was not paying attention to these concerning signs in India.
The history of India as a democracy, however, from my reading, Narendra Modi is using the tools that are available to someone who's in power to deal with the opposition that has used those same tools over the years, or is Modi a different scale of clever?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think those tools were used even, even more harshly by Indira Gandhi in the 1970s. I mean, your readers would be too young to, your listeners would be too young to remember her, but she suspended democracy for almost 2 years in the mid 1970s. So it's certainly true that Modi is not the only Indian prime minister who has gone after the media and defanged the judiciary. But in recent years, shall we say, in the last few decades, I don't think anyone has gone as far as he has to do this.
Sadanand Dume, for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, observing the second democracy summit by the Biden administration. Sadanand is at the American Enterprise Institute. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.